It's Wednesday, the 3rd of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Vladi Divac. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Jalu Marty. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast, just like Jalu Marty, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and you can be a sponsor of the podcast for a day. Also, of course, don't forget about Moneyball, Australasia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you're living in Australia or New Zealand, please go and check out Moneyball and get yourself into some DFS contests on there. Quick update on the iTunes review contest. Agonizingly close. Got smashed with iTunes reviews yesterday. Really close to number 500. Whoever becomes our iTunes review number 500 will win an NBA jersey. So if we get the exact same response we got last night, we will definitely go over 500 in the next 12 to 24 hours. And I should be able to announce that on tomorrow's show. One more shout out for the 400th iTunes review person, Ron120932. Send me an email. You won. I haven't heard from you. He must have listened to the podcast, left a review, and then not listening anymore. So Ron, I don't know what to do. End of the week. After Friday's show, if you haven't contacted me, number 401 gets the jersey. And go and enter a review. Seriously, we're really close to number 500. Not telling you exactly where we are, but if we got the same amount that we got in the last 24 hours, we'll easily pass it tomorrow. So go out there and leave a review. It would be absolutely awesome. The other couple of things that I've started doing and mentioning is on Facebook and on Instagram, a daily contest. You don't win anything apart from pride and a shout out on the podcast. But what I'm doing is on each of Facebook and on Instagram, where you can follow me on Instagram, redrock_bball, and Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. I'm going to put a player up, almost like a player prop. Today's one we had on Facebook. How many points will Kristaps
Porzingis?
How many points will Kristaps Porzingis score today? No one got it right. Porzingis scored just 10. A couple of people, I think one person had 8 and a couple of people had 12. Not quite there. On Instagram, we did how many assists will Ricky Rubio have? And someone got it. T Novi on Instagram correctly guessed 15 assists for Ricky Rubio. He was the last person to guess and got it right on the nose. 15. So T Novi, you get a shout out. You know, I'll also give you a follow on Instagram as well. And you win today's Instagram contest, the Facebook one. The pride doubles for tomorrow. It's a jackpot because no one guessed it right. So make sure you're checking out the Facebook and Instagram pages. Hey, it doesn't take long to go and have a guess, and maybe you'll get it right. We'll see which ones I'm going to do for tomorrow. Before we get into talking about the all the action for Tuesday, a quick note on Nikola Mirotic. He has had another surgical procedure. He had a hematoma that he's had to have removed. This is separate from the appendicitis that he had, where he had to have his appendix removed, and it's going to tack on recovery time. At this point, he has no timetable to return. Initially, he had the appendicitis, had his appendix removed, and he was going to return after the All-Star break. He's gone back into hospital and has now had to have a hematoma removed, which is like a blood clot, internal bruise sort of thing. I know that's not very technical, but that's sort of what a hematoma is. He's had to have that removed, and he's still in hospital. He's expected to be released in the next few days. It's going to make his recovery longer. We do not know at this point how long it's going to be. It might be an extra week, but he's not a mandatory hold now. If he's going to miss more time, look, he was going to come back after the All-Star break. He wasn't going to miss that much time, but if it's an extra week, 2 weeks on top of that, that's going to make Mirotic mighty tough to hold on to. Really, again, it depends on your situation. It depends who else is out there. But by no means is he a lock and has to be owned in all formats at this point. If this is going to stretch on, which it quite possibly could with an extra surgical procedure in the last couple of days from Nikola Mirotic. Before we move on to the awards of the night, just want to give you an idea. I want to tell you about our great friends at SeatGeek. They are a sponsor of today's podcast. SeatGeek is the smart way to buy and sell tickets for live events. You can use it to find the best deals on tickets to NBA and NHL games, college basketball, and concerts. And if your NFL team is still in the playoffs, you'll want to hear about SeatGeek's latest offer. SeatGeek, it's a lot like Kayak or Expedia, but it's for sports and concert tickets. It pulls all the tickets available on other sites into one place to make comparison shopping easy. SeatGeek also grades every ticket from 0 to 100 based on value, so you can quickly find the best deal within your budget. Best of all, SeatGeek always shows you the full price of each ticket up front, which means no surprise fees. If you look at Super Bowl tickets on StubHub, they tack on hundreds, even thousands of dollars in fees at checkout, so don't be fooled. Use SeatGeek instead. There's a special Super Bowl offer. All of my listeners can get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase, but if you buy Super Bowl tickets on SeatGeek after entering promo code REDROCK, which is one word, SeatGeek will send you $100. That's right, it's $100 back if you use the promo code REDROCK on SeatGeek to buy Super Bowl tickets. Here's how it works. Download the free SeatGeek app. I'm sure you know how to do that. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Again, very easy. Enter the promo code REDROCK. It's one word, it's seven letters. That's not hard to do. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase, or $100 if you use SeatGeek to buy Super Bowl tickets. It's a pretty good deal. Download the free SeatGeek app right now and enter the promo code REDROCK, which, as you can see on the screen, is one word. Now, we are done with the peripheral stuff to start the show. Michael Bolton, let's kick it off.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night. Again, if you're watching on video, you might be able to see the jersey I'm wearing. You can definitely see it. You want to know what team it is, though, because it is a Christmas jersey. I'll let you guys have a bit of a look. There you go. Pretty cool, huh? It is my D'Angelo Russell Los Angeles Lakers jersey. No, D'Angelo Russell did not win the monstrous line of the night, but his teammate did, and his teammate's name is Kobe Bryant. Bryant played 33 minutes and had 38 points. This is a massive, massive game from Kobe. 7 triples, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 10 of 21 from the field, 11 of 12 from the free throw line, really turning back the clock into a vintage-like Kobe performance. That's 2 massive games in a row for Kobe. He is not a must-own player, but in field goal, punt field goal builds, he still has quite a bit of value, as we've seen, you know, what he's doing. Now, even in 8 category leagues, he's ranked 140th on the season. You take away his just terrible field goal percentage, he jumps up, you know, 40, 50 spots probably. He's a top 100 sort of guy. He should be owned in all those sort of builds. Over the last 2 weeks, he's a top 50 guy. Oh, sorry, he's a top 60 guy, even with the poor field goal percentage. So he is providing, you know, nice assists, nice rebounds. His three-pointers are out of control at the moment, over 4.3 in the last 3 games. 2 steals a game. Yes, he's going to miss games with the shoulder, with Achilles, with knees, with whatever sort of issues. There's going to be rest involved for Kobe. But in a punt field goal situation, streaming Kobe in, adding him short-term and seeing what happens, he pretty much has to be owned in those sort of things. But the impact that he can have on your field goal percentage is almost the impact that, say, a DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond, Dwight Howard has on your free throws. Not quite at that level. You know, in between those guys and, say, a Rudy Gobert, that sort of level of guys. It's a big deal. You can take away the advantage of having a lot of high field goal percentage guys by adding him to your team. It's a no joke number. On the season, his Z score for that category is -3.23, which is huge. It's over 3 standard deviations, and that's what the Z scores are. That's how far down and how much of a drag it brings on your entire team. He's been a little bit better than that recently. In the last month, it's just a -1.71, shooting 39%, and that's because it's 4% up and it's on 4 attempts less. So it makes a big difference. But Kobe's still a guy you want to look at it in punt field goal builds. And there's going to be games missed. And then if he gets hurt, misses a few, you move on. But for now, the value is definitely there for Kobe Bean Bryant. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Markieff Morris of the Phoenix Suns. Really, really interesting to see what the Suns were doing in this game. Morris played 41 minutes, 30 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 1-3, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Really close for him getting the monstrous line of the night. Huge performance from Markieff. He's a guy that at the start of the year, start of 2016, I added him in a number of leagues. I've held on to him and I said, look, let's just wait and see what happens over the next few weeks, see what happens at the trade deadline. The trade deadline didn't come. Jeff Hornacek's firing didn't come. Earl Watson is like, we want to run a more stable rotation, which thank God if that's what he actually does. It give the players give your best players the best minutes. It's a massively novel concept. I know. It's amazing when those sort of things happen. Play your best players the most minutes. And Markieff Morris is one of their best players. He went through a lot of struggles at the start of the season. He has to be owned. He is top 60 relevant. No, not relevant. He's top 60 upside. That's where he can be. That's how good he can be. It's true. I'm going to sneeze. I apologize. Didn't come out. The beauty of doing live video. That was weird. His beef is mainly with the front office. He had issues with Jeff Hornacek. He was, you know, throwing towels at him, the technical rule. But Hornacek, let's be honest, he did a lot of dumb things. If Watson, as the new coach, loves Markieff, as he came out and said, and he says he wants Markieff to be the focal point of this team, he has to be owned absolutely everywhere. You need to make sure that Markieff Morris is owned in your league. He should have been owned probably over the last few weeks because he'd been putting up decent numbers even in a backup role. I've got him, I think, in two or three different leagues. It's looking promising. He may still get traded. There's no doubt about that. The front office still has the issues with him. He still has the issues with the front office. None of that has been smoothed out at all. But he's got a coach who's showing more faith in him. And at least for the time being, that's going to work out well. And even if he gets traded, maybe he goes to a decent situation there anyway. So Morris is a guy that has to be owned. He was awesome in this game. And the Suns jumped out to a red-hot start. Couldn't get over the Raptors. But he has been he's been good, Morris. And that's the thing that I'm trying to get at. Yes, a big game here, but his last 2 weeks of action, he's a top 50 player anyway. So it's not just this one game. You know, 14, 6.5, 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, half a 3, 48 and 67. They're pretty decent numbers, and they're clearly useful in basically any sort of league that you can be in. I envisage a relatively big second half for Markieff. Trade could come, but I reckon the odds of a trade is slightly decreased, marginally, just a little bit. But yeah, his role, if he does remain in Phoenix, should be relatively consistent. Let's hope so. That's what Earl Watson's preaching. Let's hope he actually sticks by his word and continues to do that. The young gun of the night is Andy Wiggins of the Minnesota Timberwolves. 41 minutes for Wiggins. He had 30 points, which is not quite a standard for him, but you know he's going to be a pretty good scorer. 5 boards, but he chipped in the other areas too. 1-3, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He went 13 of 20 from the field, which is great. 3 of 6 from the free throw line, not so ideal. But a big night from Wiggins. He had struggled in his two previous games this season against the Los Angeles Lakers. Didn't struggle, obviously, in this one, so that's good to know. A big game from Wiggins. You know my thoughts on him from a fantasy point of view. It's just he struggles in a lot of different areas at this point in his career, despite his really high scoring numbers. Everything else is just not quite up to scratch, and that's probably going to be the way that is for at least this season, maybe even next season. The dud of the night goes to Michael Carter-Williams of the Milwaukee Bucks. Carter-Williams was brilliant in yesterday's game, not so brilliant in today's one. He played only the 26 minutes in this game. Jared Bayless got more run than him, and Jason Kidd back to his nefarious tricks. 2 points for Carter-Williams, 6 rebounds and 2 assists. Kidd's going to do this from time to time. It's just what he does. He makes decisions. He makes decisions that are wrong quite a bit. They lose. Fantastic. Sorry, Bucks fans. You just ride out Carter Williams. He'll probably go back and play 37 in the next one and put up a big game. That's what Kidd does. He's back and forward. Doesn't allow consistency. And you know how much consistency pisses me off, or inconsistency pisses me off with coaching and when they make knee-jerk reactions every 5 seconds. That's what Kidd likes to do. He's in that group of coaches that just do my head in. Carter Williams is not a great player. He struggles and he makes mistakes, all that sort of stuff. But he's a better player than what Jared Bayless is, and I'd rather them at least try and develop him and play him a little bit more, much like they did when Kidd was out with that hip surgery. Carter Williams was a lot better during that stretch without Kidd jerking him back and forward. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup now for Tuesday. At point guard, Kyle Lowry, 38.6. This is part of the what I mentioned yesterday, that we look at it and we think maybe the Raptors are going to have a blowout, but so many factors were going against them, and they started off really slowly. So Lowry had to play a decent role. He put up 38.6 points. On the other side, Archie Goodwin, new coach. He'd been struggling the last 3. Big night from Archie Goodwin, 36.4. You really wouldn't have wanted to play him in a cash game, but in a tournament, he was always worth a punt. James Harden, 54.8. He's just absolutely on a roll at the moment. Really, really striking. His salary was massive, and it was a bit of a turnoff, but hey, he got there. And Kobe with another 53.3. A fantastic performance. Evan Turner got his value at 36 points, even with Jay Crowder playing. He was a guy that I really liked if Crowder was going to be out, but he went off against the Knicks. And Giannis Antetokounmpo put up over 40 points, 40.1 to be exactly. And he has been a little bit up and down, but relatively solid lately. Power forwards, Markieff Morris, 54.2, I've already spoken about him, and Julius Randle, 31.4. Just another solid performance from Randle, nothing overly spectacular, but really doing enough in DFS. And at center, Robin Lopez, 39.6. He'd been completely out of the spotlight, not getting enough playing time, but this really appealed as a nice matchup for him. It worked out brilliantly in that respect, 39.6 for Lopez at his low salary. Him and the rest of those guys, if you added them up, they would have given you 384.6 points, which is obviously would have won you a tournament. No shit, if it's the perfect lineup. It's time now for us to take just a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Then we'll be back to get into these games in a little bit more detail. Alright guys, we are back. Let's look at these games. There are five of them. The first one was the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. Evan Turner played 29 minutes. As I said, Jay Crowder did play, but his minutes have been reduced lately. Probably dealing with that leg injury is not helping. 29 minutes for Turner, 14, 10, and 4, 3 steals, a really nice night. He's providing decent, even standard league value, and his DFS value has been pretty good recently. I don't buy it as a long-term seasonal sort of thing for him. He's a great option for assists. The 3 steals is a bit fluky. 10 rebounds is not something that's going to happen all that often. He's more of an out-of-position assist guy, but he's getting pretty good run. And while Crowder's still dealing with his leg issue, Turner's going to have a slightly increased role. Isaiah Thomas was good, 20 points, 5 rebounds, and 8 assists. While Tyler Zeller, out of absolutely nowhere, played 27 minutes, went 16 and 10 with a steal. That is a Brad Stevens special. I don't know what to make of it. There's nothing to make of it. It's just Brad Stevens going, we haven't used Tyler Zeller for a bit. Let's play him and play him the most minutes out of every front court player. Completely baffling, completely nonsensical in terms of what you're doing in the rotation. But a big game from Zeller. Let's just wait and see if it turns into anything further. I doubt it. Kelly Olynyk went 13 and 5 with a block and a 3. He should be owned in all 12 team leagues despite the limited minutes. And Jared Sullinger only played 17. He went 4 and 2 while Amir Johnson played 15 minutes. And he went 4 and 4. Both of those guys did rack up fouls relatively early, and that probably necessitated the Zeller play, but to play Zeller 27 minutes was a little bit odd. And Jonas Jerebko, who'd been playing really well, played 7 minutes and all he did was miss a shot, which was a little bit weird as well, given how he'd been playing. Marcus Smart, not as good as what he'd been previously. 4 points, 1 rebound, 2 assists. Didn't add up a couple of steals, but he is a must-own guy. On the Knicks, Robin Lopez, as I mentioned, 37 minutes, 17 and 13, 2 assists and 3 blocks, has to be owned in 12 team leagues, been criminally underused recently by Derek Fisher, but was back in his good graces here. No Jose Calderon, so Langston Galloway got another start, and Langston Galloway was abjectly terrible. 1 point. One. He missed all 4 of his field goal attempts. He did have 9 rebounds and 2 assists. Calderon looks like he's going to be back in the next game or two, so Galloway's run in a standard league is probably not going to be any further than this, would be my guess. Saša Vujačić, in 18 minutes, had 13 points with a couple of threes. That's another decent night from Vujačić, but he's strictly just a deeper league guy. And Aaron Aflalo had an okay night. Now, he didn't hit his shots at a great clip, 7 of 16. 18 points with a couple of threes is a decent return. 3 assists and a steal is also okay, but he still falls outside of a must-own 12-team league guy. I touched on it early when we were talking about the Facebook contests, but
Porzingis,
he's struggling a little bit. 27 minutes for Porzingis, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block. So still doing it with the defensive numbers there. Not quite the same, but he's done this a couple of times. He has a dip, and then he goes back up and starts playing fantastically. Then he slumps a little bit. He's in the middle of a slump at the moment. I'm not concerned that it's going to be, well, this is what he's going to be for the rest of the season or anything like that. His minutes have been a bit depressed recently also. I imagine that he'll start to play better in the next week or so and start to kick things back up again. Mallow played 35 minutes, had 16, 14, and 4. A really terrible night, though, shooting 4 of 16 and 7 of 10 from the free throw line, but his season has been quite, let's say underrated. That's not the right word. It's been underappreciated for a lot of the time. Not much else to really talk about on the Knicks. The next game, the Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets. the Heat. Justice Winslow getting big minutes again. He's really starting to come on now. 11-8, 2 assists, 3 steals, and a 3-pointer. 32 minutes for him. Tyler Johnson remains out, so he's going to continue to get some decent minutes on the wing. He's a top 60 player over the last 2 weeks, and it's mainly from him really upping his field goal percentage. He's a 61% guy over those last 2 weeks. I don't buy that being something that's going to continue. He also hasn't missed a free throw in that time, which again is not something that I really think is going to continue. But his free throws have been, they started off the season terribly. He's been fantastic at it recently. His last 2 months, he's at 82%. On the season, he's only at 71. So a real improvement for him recently. He's not going to wow you in scoring, but if he can start hitting some threes, the rebounding is way up for him and the steals. He does have at least some short-term value in 12-team leagues. I've got him stashed in a roto league on a bench in a deeper roto league just to see what happens with him moving forward. But the minutes are way up and the production is starting to catch up. And he has been, as I said, a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks. Gerald Green had a decent night, 13, 4, and 3 in 25 minutes, but he is strictly a deeper league guy. And Luol Deng's strong run continued, 17, 8, and 3, 2 threes, and a steal. He's really picked up the pace with Hassan Whiteside out, and you even have to consider, he's been a great DFS option, but you have to consider him as a short-term streaming standard league sort of player. His upside is not high, but he's putting together a pretty solid run at the moment, Deng, so he's not someone to completely disregard. No Whiteside. Amari Stoudemire started again, played 24 minutes, 14 and 10 with an assist. He just looks fantastic when he plays in these short bursts. You could have done a lot worse than add him, as it turns out, in standard leagues when Whiteside went down. He'd done basically zero all season, but he's playing fantastically. You'll have to think that he'll retain some minutes in the rotation even when Whiteside returns. But for now, he's just a... Yeah, if Whiteside misses another game, Stoudemire can get streamed in, that sort of player. Goran Dragic, 14, 4, and 6. Whatever. And Dwayne Wade, 16, 4, and 4 with a steal and a block. A pretty nice night from Wade, but the poor percentages weren't ideal. And Chris Bosh could not take advantage of the Houston bump for big men. 13 and 7, a block and a 3 on 3 of 11 shooting. Not his greatest performance. The bench was, aside from Winslow and Green, the rest of the guys off the bench didn't do much at all. The Rockets, James Harden, the Rockets actually went into this game without Dwight Howard, who was suspended by the NBA. They had Clint Capella, who was out, and they had Montrezl Harrell out. So they were severely restricted in the players they had. Jim Harden was fantastic, 26, 4, and 14, 3 triples, 2 steals, 1 block, awesome. Josh Smith was also awesome. He started at center. He had 19 points in just 21 minutes, and that 21 minutes was because he had 5 fouls, so he probably would have played more. 3 threes, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 1 block, and actually went 8 of 13 from the field. So quite a Josh Smith line, apart from the elevated field goal percentage. Not sure that that means that I need to go and grab him in a 12-team league, but he does have appeal if you don't give a shit about what your percentages are like. Corey Brewer started again. He had 10 points and 4 rebounds. That's not the issue here. What he did was he had a Richie Beno, 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He can be a very, very good steals guy, like awesomely good steals guy, but he just isn't quite at that level this year as what he has been in seasons past. So I'm not thinking that he's a standard league guy. Pat Beverley, he is 14, 3, and 2, 3 threes and a block. A nice night from him in 29 minutes. And Trevor Ariza had a triple one with 9 points. So not his best performance recently. Marcus Thornton had been a little bit out of the rotation, came back here, played 23 minutes with all the injuries, 18, 5, and 3 with 4 triples. Harkening back to those early season days when he was playing in the very small lineup and putting up top 50 sort of numbers. Don't really see that that's going to be happening anytime soon. With Capella, with Howard, with Harrell out, Terrence Jones got 29 minutes, and shockingly enough, he disappointed again. 11 and 7, 1 assist and 1 steal. He can be dropped in every single 12-team league, and probably even 14-team leagues, to be honest. That's how poor he has been this season. The Raptors and the Suns. Kyle Lowry, 42 minutes. That's what I was saying yesterday. Don't think that they're going to get limited too much. 26, 3, and 4, 2 steals, 5 triples. A big night from him. DeMar DeRozan also had 22 points with a triple one and 3 dimes. And some pretty efficient shooting, except from his 5 from 9 from the free throw line. Terrence Ross played 27 minutes. Didn't get the start, even though James Johnson was out. That went to Norman Powell. Ross played 27 minutes though, 16 and 3 with a couple of triples, and Corey Joseph played 27 and went 10 points and 4 assists. So it's Ross and Joseph who are the clear beneficiaries if Johnson has to miss any time. Now, James Johnson has gone for an MRI on that ankle. Joseph and Cam and Ross are not must-own players though. Let's see what happens, but they're not like, I must sacrifice everything to go and grab them. Bismack Biyombo played 29 minutes in this one, while Jonas Valanciunas was limited to 19 minutes because Dwayne Casey is Dwayne Casey. Biyombo, 7 points, 12 rebounds and a block. Valanciunas, 14 and 6 in his 19 minutes. Still, I'm never going to understand Casey's hatred of Valanciunas. Yeah, I know there's some of it, it's defensive, but just play the guy. Look, he's a beast rebounder. He's an awesome scorer for a big man. Casey just has a real aversion to playing Valanciunas. Let's hope it turns around. It looked like it was at the start of the season. He's in a bit of a rough patch at the moment. Patrick Patterson played 29 minutes while Luis Scola played 19. Both were poor. And Norman Powell, who did get the start, his first NBA start, did not score. He had 15 minutes, had a couple of steals, but not much else. And he is strictly just a Dynasty League guy. On to the Phoenix Suns, where there's a lot of interest here. Archie Goodwin played 45 minutes, 18, 2, and 12, 1 block and 2 threes. I don't think we can expect 45 minutes every night, but as long as Brandon Knight remains out, Goodwin is a must-own player. Devin Booker's a must-own player regardless, 27 and 5, 6 triples and 2 steals. He is going to be locked into a pretty decent role moving forward, and I imagine PJ Tucker will as well, because the other thing I forgot to mention with the Suns earlier on is that TJ Warren is now ruled out for the rest of the season with a broken foot. So PJ Tucker is going to be a 35 to 36 minute guy, I would imagine, on most nights. 10 and 6, 2 assists, 2 steals for PJ Tucker. He should be owned in most leagues as well, depending on your team strategy. Tyson Chandler played 18 minutes. He battled foul trouble. Alex Len played 16 minutes. He also battled foul trouble. So yes, some of that time, Morris was able to get some extra run. Obviously, Chandler started over Len in this one. We don't know if Len is going to start getting more minutes moving forward. That would be my hope, but it might not be the case. So Len, after we've seen this first game, he's not a must-own guy. He was a guy that I was all for. If you had an empty roster spot, go and add Len and see what played out. And Morris was also that guy. And Morris is the one who's paid off here. Len might pay off at this point, but not the greatest start to his tenure under Earl Watson. John Lua played 4 minutes, which is fine because he's really not that good, and 24 minutes to Mirza Teletovic. He had 6 points with a couple of threes. He's really just a stream option for 3-pointers, while Jordy McRae played 2 minutes for 2 points. Deep league only for Jordy McRae. Apparently, Jordy McRae is available now in ESPN leagues. He is also listed as a power forward. So thank you, ESPN, for finally getting him available and for stuffing up his position. Awesome. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Portland Trailblazers. Jared Bayless played 30 minutes. He had 16 points with 5 assists and 2 threes. This is what he was doing at the start of the season before his ankle problem. Haven't seen much of it since coming back then. He was a clear 12-team league guy. At this point, he's not quite there. He's a 14-team league guy. But one or two more of these, and he'll definitely be someone to look at in 12-teamers. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 19, 8 and 5, 1 3, 2 steals, 1 block, a very nice all-round performance. And Chris Middleton was back in business too, 21 and 8 with 3 steals and 2 triples, and added 3 assists, but not the greatest shooting, 7 of 22 for Chris Middleton. Greg Monroe, 30 minutes, 17 and 8. These are all sort of stock standard-ish performances from these guys. Jabari Parker, not so stock standard. 6 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal and 1 block is pretty nice. He should still be owned in 12-team leagues. Wasn't the greatest night, though. John Henson was out again. Miles Plumlee played 18 minutes for 8 and 6 with a block, doing his best Henson approximation. And Rashard Vaughn got 18 minutes with OJ Mayo once again sidelined with that hamstring problem. The Portland Trailblazers, CJ McCollum, had 30 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 threes, 2 steals, 2 blocks. An exceptionally full line from him, while Damian Lillard took a back seat and went 14, 5, and 12. The front court situation, Al-Farouq Aminu's worked his way back into a much better and bigger role. He is a must-own player, 16 and 5, 3 triples and 3 steals. There's going to be ups and downs, and there are times when he wasn't worth owning for long stretches, but for now, he's back in business. And the Gerald Henderson 22-minute spectacular continues, another 22 for him, 14 and 9, 1 3 and 1 block, but he's only a deeper league sort of player. Mason Plumlee's minutes, limited. He only played 20, but he did have 5 fouls, so that's the reason there. still had 8 rebounds, 1 steal, and 3 blocks, so getting it done in that sense. And Myers Leonard here had 9 points, and all of those came from 3-pointers. Noah Vonleh played 16 minutes, but he did suffer an ankle sprain, so we might be seeing a change in the starting lineup. I don't know why Vonleh has continued to start. You know my annoyance with starting a guy and playing them 14 minutes. It makes no sense to me. Maybe if Vonleh's out, they'll start Myers Leonard and play him 25 minutes, play him 26 minutes. And maybe they'll start Alan Crabbe and play Alfred Aminu at power forward. I don't know. But just there's no point in playing Vonleh or starting him anyway. The Alan Crabbe, 11 points in his 25 minutes. He's really, I just don't find him as a standard league sort of player. He's not my sort of standard league player anyway. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Lakers. Gorgui Dieng, 37 minutes, 19-6-5 with a steal, continuing to go crazy. He has to be owned in all leagues. Clearly, Kevin Garnett might impact him, but I don't care. He's still got to own him. And Zach LaVine played 26 off the bench, going 14-7 with a couple of three-pointers with Kevin Martin out. LaVine also has to be owned. Thankfully, we didn't see 50 minutes of Tayshaun Prince. We only got 18 of them for 6 points and 3 assists. And that allowed us to see some more Damian Ruggiers, which I really like. 6 points in 14 minutes. He's not on any fantasy radar, just good to see him into the game. Rick Rubio, 10 points in his 29 minutes. A couple of rebounds, but 15 assists and a steal is why you bring Rubio onto your team. And Karl-Anthony Towns, a little bit quiet, but still 14-9 with a 3-2 blocks and hitting 6 of 9 from the field is impressive. The fact that he only took 9 shots is definitely not impressive. Not really sure what's going on there. Sam Mitchell, thanks for, again, not a great coaching performance, but Towns is awesome, as we know. On the Lakers, Lou Williams was pretty good as well, along with Kobe. 20 points with 3 triples, 4 assists, and a steal. He is a 12-team league guy. I even own him in a 10-team league and a punt field goal percentage team, and he's doing what I need him to do, hitting threes, getting some assists, and scoring, really helping to boost my scoring numbers. D'Angelo Russell had probably his best games in recent times, 18-3-3 with two triples in his 28 bench minutes. And Julius Randle started, played 32 minutes, 15-12 with 2 assists, which is a great DFS line, but no threes, no steals, no blocks, and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. It does hamper his standard league value. Still should be owned. Roy Hibbert, on the other hand, played 16 minutes for 2 points. He is one of the more curious cases of players completely just falling apart. I can't put my finger exactly on what. Yes, the game has changed, but he is just... It is weird. No, I'll leave it at that. We got some Tariq Black action, which I love. 20 minutes for Black, 2 points, 4 rebounds, 1 steal and 2 blocks. Only a deeper league sort of player, but good to see him actually getting back into the rotation. And 35 minutes for Jordy Clarkson, 16-3-2, and chipped in a couple of steals. He's still probably the worst or second worst player on your roster. He just can't seem to get anywhere close to where he was last season, which sort of makes sense with all the other backcourt options brought in this season. All right, time for me to have a quick break, and then we're going to be back to look at DFS for Wednesday. There are 11 games, so get yourself comfy. There are 11 games, as I mentioned, hey, about 30 seconds ago, so hopefully you haven't forgotten by then. Let's get stuck into these games. The Atlanta Hawks and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Hawks are favored by 8. The total is 207, and a half points. Robert Covington, Bob Cove, was dealing with an issue with gastroenteritis. He is going to play, so that's obviously good news for Bob Cove fans, good news for Sixers fans, good news for fantasy fans, because he is a pretty decent fantasy contributor. In fact, he's one of the better options, I think, in this game from a DFS point of view. He's priced at only 5,100. He's been consistently beating that. He's 5-game and 3-game averages are well above that, hitting almost 29 across his last five. In fact, his lowest score in his last five games is just 24. So that makes him a superb cash game option. I think he's a really nice tournament option also. The ease matchup for him against the Hawks is not an overly tough one. He is one of the better players of the day. I also think his opposition in Kent Bazemore is pretty decent value. Now, I've been hammering on about Bazemore, about my thoughts on his talent level a lot. But he's at 4,900 here. The production hasn't been great, but the matchup's nice. I think that he can, you know, at 4,900, he can. Can he get to 25 points? He's a pretty decent chance to in this sort of matchup. I definitely don't, if I'm spending up money, this isn't really spending up money, but I'd rather chuck the extra $200 out and put Bob Cove in there. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. But if you need to shave $200 off, then Kent Bazemore in a pretty nice spot here. I think he's worth a look. The big men for the Hawks are in terms of matchup-wise, really nice spots. Al Horford at 7,100. The price has come down. His production has come down as well, so not overly keen on using him. And Paul Millsap at 8,000. His salary's come down enough as well. Now, I think that Millsap and Horford against the Sixers previously have been able to put up pretty big numbers, so they're definitely not guys that I'm completely writing off. I think they both can be used, and I wouldn't be steering too far away from them in cash games, and in tournaments, I think they're pretty good options as well. Their recent form hasn't really stacked up, but they've been able to play pretty well against the Sixers so far this season. Nerlens Noel at 6,800. He's averaging 33 across the last three. Now, he's going to be rejoined by Jelly Okafor in the starting lineup, so that makes me a little bit hesitant to use Nerlens Noel. We know that an addition of Okafor reduces Noel's output by a couple of points most of the time, so it makes me a little bit worried about using him. I don't want to use Okafor at 6,400. We don't know what sort of minutes he's going to get for a start, and his production hasn't been meeting that sort of level of expectation recently. Speaking of levels of expectation, Ish Smith, his price has jumped almost to 7,000. He's at 6,900. He's been basically doing that sort of work, though, over the last three, averaging almost 35. But I'm not really, like, when a guy's price at 6,900, I don't want them to be averaging right on that amount. I need them to be going a little bit higher. He can have nights where his shot doesn't fall. Probably not the best option, I don't think, Ish Smith. I don't mind his backcourt partner, Isaiah Cannon, who's at 3,700, who's getting a lot more minutes at shooting guard. There's a lot of positive stuff coming out about Cannon from Philadelphia, so I think that he can find himself into 26 or 27 minutes, hit a couple of threes. He's more of a tournament option, but he's at 3,700. You can throw him into a cash game, and if he gets 17, 18 points, it's fine at 3,700. It's not a big issue. Jeffy Teague, 6,200, really been playing well lately, averaging 32 across his last five. I don't think he's going to have a big 50-pointer like he did in the last one. But he's not a guy that I'm definitely avoiding, despite some of the earlier troubles he had in January. He looks to have turned that around. He feels like a decent 30-point bet on most nights, especially the way he's currently playing. So I'm okay with getting him out there and using him. Dennis Schroeder, I won't be touching him. And Kyle Korver at 4,000 is strictly a tournament play. The matchup looks good for him, but... And he was really good in the last game, but the recent production, the inconsistency, is not pointing to him being a great cash game option. Cleveland and Charlotte, there is no spread out for this one. Kemba Walker, Charlotte's got a lot of issues here. Kemba Walker is questionable with a knee issue. Nick Batum is doubtful with his toe, and Cody Zeller is listed as questionable with his shoulder. So there could be these guys coming back, there could be guys going out. We're going to assume there's no Nick Batum, he's doubtful, and obviously if Kemba is out, then you have to look at guys like Brian Roberts. He'd be the guy to plug in from a DFS point of view if they happen to sit Walker in this one. Now, if Cody Zeller returns, it's going to limit guys like Marvin Williams, Frank Kaminsky, Spencer Hawes, especially, who'd been filling in for Zeller. I think the value is on the Cleveland side of things. Tristan Thompson's at 4,800. He's feels like just 25 points each night for him. And at 4,800, that's beautiful for a cash game. You don't really hold any fears for him going up against his Charlotte front court at the moment. Kyrie Irving has been playing fantastically. He's still priced under 7,000, 6,900. He's averaging 35 across the last three. I reckon he is one of the better point guard plays on the board. That is such a cheap price for a guy who realistically could be 89, 9,200, that sort of range. His form is kicking up. His minutes are way up there. His production is getting back to normal as well. This is not a scary matchup for him. J.R. Smith's at 5,000, probably more of a tournament play, a really good matchup spot here, but not for cash games. And LeBron at 10,200. No Nick Batum. For LeBron to get 45 here, it feels like it should be a walk in the park for him, so that I'm okay with using him. Now, if these guys happen to be out, now we know Batum's going to be out, Jeremy Lamb might not play, Kemba Walker might not play. Jeremy Lin's the other guy. I mentioned Brian Roberts earlier, but Jeremy Lin would be the guy at 5,000 who is going to see a tremendous amount of play if Kemba happens to be out. So keep an eye on him. Kevin Love at 7,700 has been playing fantastically well also. He's averaging almost 40 points across the last three. His lowest score in his last five is 24, but he's been playing even a lot better than that recently. He's at 7,700, so he is quite expensive, but he's not expensive enough that you have to be completely off him. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at 5,800. I do like him. He put up almost 39 in the last one. He's averaging 30 since he came back, which is pretty good for a guy who's just back or from an exceptionally early recovery from a shoulder reconstruction. He is putting up some big numbers. He's at 5,800 here. Matchup is not great, but given what he's been doing, he's not a must play, but he's a guy that you have to look at it and see how he fits into your lineup. Marv Williams at 5,700, it's very dependent if Cody Zeller comes back. If Zeller's not back, 5,700 seems like a good price for Williams. If Zeller is back, we'll forget about him. And Spencer Hall is the same sort of situation. 4,100, no Zeller, worth a play. Zeller playing, no chance. The next game, the Detroit Pistons and the Boston Celtics. Celtics are favored by 4, and the total is 210 in this game. No real injury news to report in this one, thankfully. It's always good to not have to worry too much about injuries. Andre Drummond is at 8,700. He's a hard guy to play in a cash game situation because we don't know in terms of if he's going to get sat with hacking, but his production's been great lately, averaging 38 across the last three. He's still priced at 8,700. Celtics front court is an awesome matchup, so I'm all for using Andre Drummond. There is definitely risk involved with that hacking strategy, but there's a 50-point night written here with his name on it. Stan Johnson at 4,000 didn't quite come through in the last game, had been playing pretty well up until that one. The return of Ersan Ilyasova sort of stunts him a little bit, probably leave him out of it. Marcus Morris is at 5,100. He just doesn't do it for me. His highest score in his last five games is 23.6, which is well below 5x value, and that's just not appealing enough for me. Kelly Olynyk at 5,000, tournament. What I'm going to say about the other guys. Amir Johnson, 5,200. Probably even not a tournament given the way he's played and given the way that power forwards are being defended for the Pistons. And Jared Sullinger, he is priced the highest out of the lot, 5,400 for Sullinger, and he is like Amir Johnson, hasn't been able to put together a really big performance of late anyway. Ersan Ilyasova is at 5,500, a really positive matchup for him here. He looked great in his first game back. He's still probably more of a tournament GPP sort of player, but he could get away in a cash. I probably wouldn't personally. 7,800 for Isaiah Thomas and 7,000 for Reggie Jackson. Which one of those two guys do I prefer? I would probably take Thomas, but neither of them really appeal to me too much. The Jackson situation going up against the Boston backcourt in terms of defense is clearly not an appealing one. And 5,700 for Marcus Smart. Again, Detroit pretty good defensively against the backcourt, so we'll leave him out of it. Evan Turner really flying at the moment. 5,200 is his salary. He's averaging 28 over the last three games. He dropped 36 in today's one. He is definitely someone that you can have a look at and hope that it works out. A little bit risky given his bench role, but with the way that Jay Crowder's limited in his minutes with his calf and shin issue, you would think that Turner is a 28, 29 minute guy most of the time, or at least in the short term. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is priced at 5,900. Not against the Celtics. I just don't think that he's going to be able to really retain value for as much as I like him. Jay Crowder is not someone we want to use until he can get back going over the 30 minutes a night, which is not something he's been really close to recently. The Indiana Pacers and the Brooklyn Nets. The Pacers are favored by 7, and the total here is 200.5 points. Jan Mahinmi has been ruled out already. So, gentlemen, start your Jordan Hills and start your Miles Turners. Jordan Hill's at 4,700. He's basically 30 points a night at the moment. And Miles Turner's at 5,500. Same for him. Yeah, plus 30 points basically every night they're playing at the moment. The Nets aren't going to be a scary proposition in that sense. Both those guys remain awesome, awesome DFS options. Thad Young's at 6,300. This is not the spot to play Thad Young. His form is not indicating that it is, and the matchup is definitely not indicating it. He can be left alone. Any other Nets guys? Brook Lopez is worth considering. He's been playing fantastically well. His salary is out of control, though. He's at 8,900. He's almost at 9,000, which is a lot. Yes, he is averaging 51.5 across the last three games, which is superb. And I would imagine he'd get low 40s probably in this one. But at 9,000, there's a definite risk involved in Brook Lopez. Don't completely rule it out, though, because as good as the Pacers are against opposition centers, Jan Mahinmi is a big part of that. And he's out. Jordan Hill's not anywhere near the defender that Mahinmi is. So we might see more Brook Lopez. And he's in a pretty strong role at the moment. George Hill is at 5,900. It doesn't get much easier than playing the Nets in terms of point guards. He almost went for 40 in the last game. He's averaging over 25 in the last five and almost 30 in the last three. He is a decent, cheapish point guard. Less than 6,000 is not a big salary to pay up for. 8,200 for Paul George. The production just hasn't been there recently at all. He has had a 50-point game, though, in his last five. The matchup's beautiful here. Maybe he gets his shot to fall. I like Paul George more in a tournament than in a cash game, though. Another guy that's okay in a tournament here is Wayne Ellington, who's playing big minutes and 3,900. He just needs to get hot and hit a couple of threes, and he surpassed that value. And the point guards in Brooklyn, Donald Sloan and Shane Larkin. Larkin has the most upside to me. He also has the lower floor because he is in a bench role. He's a decent guy for a tournament. They're both priced at 4,300. Larkin's an okay guy to look at in a tournament. Same with Sloan. You don't want to risk them in cash game formats. Monte Ellis came back to earth in his last game. He's at 6,900. The matchup is okay. I'm okay rolling it back out. I think a lot of people will be off him after having a relatively high ownership the last time that the Pacers played. But at 6,900, I don't have massive confidence that he's going to go for 35. So he's not someone who's way up there in my list of must include this guy in lineups list. I don't really have a list that's named that because it'd be a pretty long and cumbersome name. But you know what I'm talking about, I hope. I hope I'm not talking crap. The Orlando Magic and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 13. There's a total of 212.5 here. This has got a little bit of blowout alert for the Thunder. So guys like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, as good as they've been, there's a chance they lose 5-6 minutes off their playing time here. Dion Waiters probably won't lose any playing time. He's been decently good. He's getting a lot of minutes. He's at 4,100. You're getting 35 minutes a night. I think you almost have to go and look at him in a tournament and think in 35 minutes there's going to be a night where something's going to happen for Waiters, and this could be it. He's not a bad cash game option, but definitely more of a tournament player to me. Steve Adams at 4,400. Yeah, just not happening for me either. And Enes Kanter at 5,000. Strictly tournaments and not putting any trust in him. Now, Russ Westbrook's is at 10,900. If you want to spend up for someone, he's a great guy to get out there. At almost 11,000, though, it is quite expensive. And the risk of a blowout does worry me a little bit in this one. So, Westbrook, I'm going to have him as a recommended play at the end as an expensive point guard. But you've got to have a bit of balls to do it. KD's at 10,500. Love the matchup for him, but if the minutes go south, there could be an issue. He only put up 38 in the last game, but that was his lowest score in his last five. So his floor is very, very high. He is a really nice cash game play at 10,500. Nick Vucevic, 8,100. It's a big salary. Not a great matchup for opposition centers. This is probably a day where I'd look to fade Vucevic. Aaron Gordon at 5,200, I'd be all over him. He's basically a 30-plus point guy most nights when he's starting, averaging 35 across the last three. His highest score in his last five is 47 at 5,200. He makes a really awesome play. Lord Alfred Payton and Victor Oladipo, with the way that Skiles jerks them around, it makes them hard to use in cash games. In tournaments, though, I'm fine with it. Lord Alfred at 56, going up against Westbrook, there's a definite 30-point upside there for him, and Oladipo's got 40-point upside at 6,100, but for when Skiles, dicks around with what they're doing, it makes it really tough to stomach them in cash games. 5,800 for Serge Ibaka. He blew up in the last game, but he is so up and down that I think we'll have to leave him only for a tournament option. It's a great matchup, though, against the Magic. So I would be tempted to use him in a cash game and just hope that something happens. But there's a lot of hope in that, given the up and down nature of his play lately. Toby Harris has just been down. There's been no up with him, so I'll leave him out of it. And Mario Hezonja is not a bad guy to look at. He's at 3,500. The minutes have been way up for him lately, almost 30 in the last two or three. The production hasn't quite been there, but if he's going to get 28, 29 minutes and play in preference to Evan Fournier, there's going to be one night where it's going to click for him, and that's what makes it a pretty good tournament option. At minimum salary, when you can hopefully get 25, 27 points out of him, that could be a real big thing for him. Evan Fournier, no, the downward trend has been real. Even now in standard leagues, I'm okay with dropping you if there's someone out there that I want to go and add. Campaign, 3,600, but it's just not going to happen for him in a DFS tournament for today. Next minute, 50 points. The Golden State Warriors and the Washington Wizards, the battle for Kevin Durant, maybe. The Warriors are favored by 11.5. The total is 225.5 in this game. Chris Humphries is still questionable with that knee problem, which has been lingering for quite a while. Fantasy value in this one, it's not very big. The Warriors have got a pretty decent size spread here. So running guys like Steph Curry, who's only averaging less than 34 in the last three games, makes it a little bit tough to use them, thinking, oh, maybe he'll play less minutes. Tournament's fine. Cash games, risky. I don't mind Clay at 7,100. He's been putting up numbers in blowouts, not in blowouts. It hasn't mattered recently. He's averaging 42 across his last three games, and at 7,100, he feels like a relatively decent play as a cash game option. Harry Barnes is getting nothing happening. He's at 4,300, so he's not a bad tournament option, but I definitely can't trust him in a cash game situation. Draymond Green, 9,000. Awesome in the last one. Put up 51. His previous games, though, weren't quite at that level. He's averaging 36.5 across the last three at 51, which is okay, but it's not $9,000 worth. I'm not sure that I'd be willing to go out now and use him in this one. Although, when Green does get on a pretty good run, it does tend to continue. So for that, makes me sort of double or second guess myself and think, oh, maybe I do want to get Draymond out there. But I don't know. At 9,000, I reckon I could spend that 9,000 in a better way on someone else. For the Wizards, Marcin Gortat at 6,900. He's suffering the Jonas Valanciunas's at the moment in that his coach is benching him without any good reason. At 6,900, I can't risk using him. He hasn't been even able to get 5x value on that salary across his last five games. And the Warriors recently have been able to reduce opposition centers in their fantasy production. Johnny Wall's down to 9,700. He is not a bad play, averaging 45 across the last three. But, I don't know, 9,700 is pretty expensive. Not sure that I want to spend up for him, but yeah, he's definitely not out of consideration. Otto Porter and Brad Beal can't trust them with minutes and injuries. And Jared Dudley at 4,700 becomes an okay tournament option. He's playing over 30 minutes in the last three games. He's getting a bigger role. He can have games where he does sort of go off, but his upside's not massive though. Garrett Temple, tournament only. Andrew Bogut, 4,300, probably not want to use him. And not much else that really appeals for this matchup. The New Orleans Pelicans and the San Antonio Spurs. Whew, the Pelicans, no they're not, the Spurs are favored by 13.5 and the total is 207.5 points. The Pelicans have been a lot better lately, but the Spurs, you'd think the Spurs could handle them. It's a big spread. I am worried about using a lot of Spurs guys. You know, Kawhi Leonard, no thanks. 6,900 for LaMarcus Aldridge, put up his best game in the last one. It's a great opportunity for him against a weak Pelicans front court. And at 6,900, do I think he can go for 35? Well, maybe in a tournament, but he is a real tournament-only sort of option at the moment. Very hard to rely upon him in cash games. And Kawhi is sort of similar, even though Kawhi's upside is even not that high with the way that he's playing currently. David West is probably going to start in place of Tim Duncan, but that hasn't meant anything so far. He's done nothing with those starts. Norris Cole on the Pelican side of things at 5,000. He is a guy that you almost have to look at playing. He's averaging almost 32 across the last three. He feels like you're going to get 27 to 30 points out of him almost every night that he's out there, at least while Tyreek is out, and Tyreek is currently listed as doubtful in this one. His teammate, Anthony Davis, 10,100. I've got more hope in Anthony Davis getting value than I do with LaMarcus Aldridge at $3,000 less. Davis has got 50-point upside quite clearly. No Tim Duncan means there's not as much restriction on big men for the Spurs, so Davis is a fine play at $10,000. Danny Green, tournaments, and that's really it. And Bryce DeJean-Jones, he's at minimum salary. He's been starting. Yes, he's going to have a Spurs guy on him, but he is a 22 average across the last three, and at 3,500, you could do a lot worse than using DeJean-Jones. He could be worth looking at. Drew Holiday at 6,800, this is not the matchup that I want to really use him. Patty Mills was explosive in the last game, but I don't trust that. And I do not want to use Ryan Anderson in this matchup against the Spurs either. The Dallas Mavericks and the Miami Heat, there is no spread announced here, mainly because we don't know the status of Hassan Whiteside. We also don't know the status of Darren Williams for the Mavericks, who's dealing with that hip problem. If Williams is out, JJ Barea is at 3,900. He is a point guard you want to be all over. Despite the negative matchup against the Heat, he will get extra minutes and he'll put up big numbers if he happens to get the start, most likely. So at 3,900, he'd be a guy that's in play. Not much else really appeals to me from the Mavericks side of things. I don't really like Dirk here. Zaza Pachulia at 6,200. He has a bit of appeal if Whiteside happens to be out, but I don't love him. 6,800 for Chandler Parsons. The matchup is a terrible one in terms of ease versus position. His production has dropped off a little bit lately. He's not a guy that I'm all that keen on using. Ray Felton at 4,400 has a little bit of appeal if Williams is out, but I'd much rather spend the 500 less and use JJ Barea. On the Heat, again, no, look, maybe Hassan Whiteside at 7,900, a real positive matchup, but a guy coming back from injury and with the play of Amari Stoudemire, they might allow Whiteside to ease himself back in. That would be me being a little bit cautious. 4,800 for Luol Deng, been smashing value lately. The return of Whiteside might hurt that if Whiteside plays, but Deng at 4,800 is a great guy to have a look at in cash and in tournaments because he has been putting up pretty consistent numbers. 7,600 for Chris Bosh. It just feels a little bit high at the moment. Couldn't take advantage of the Houston situation. Not like Dallas is a massive amount better, but it just feels a little bit too expensive. Justice Winslow is at 4,200. Decent night, 25.6 points on Tuesday's action, but I'm not all that keen on using him in a DFS spot here. And 7,900 for Dwayne Wade feels a little bit expensive at the moment. He'd been playing pretty well, and I think he's definitely got a bounce back on the cards after the one poor game on Tuesday, and the Mavericks are a pretty positive matchup for him in terms of shooting guard ease, but it's a lot of money for Dwayne Wade, 7,900. I wouldn't be adverse to spending it, but I probably wouldn't be rushing to do it either. The Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are favored by 7 points. The Nuggets, home to everybody's boyfriend, Nikola Jokic. He is at 6,200. That's not stopping him. He is averaging over 41 points in his last three games. He dropped almost 50 in the last one. The Rudy Gobert situation is a concern, and it is a limiting factor, but it's not completely avoiding because we just don't know with Jokic at the moment. We know he's going to be awesome. And if he puts up 40 points, it's smashing value easily. He needs to get to 30. There is more concern, though, playing this team. Favors and Gobert, it's not an easy matchup for big men to go up against. So that is a bit of a concern for Jokic. And that means that I think I love him. I would probably end up fading him because I think his ownership percentage will be relatively high. And I think that his risk for busting in this one is higher than it is in other games. That could bite me in the ass, though. Emmanuel Mudiay. We're not going to see Jameer Nelson again. Now, Mudiay only played 24 minutes in the last one because Randy Foy got ridiculously hot. But 5,200 for Mudiay feels like a great cash game sort of play and not a bad tournament lineup option either. Not many other Nuggets guys are really appealing. Will Barton at 5,900, tournament only. Dylan Gallinari at 7,000, not even interested. And Gary Harris at 4,600, not much for me there either. Nor is Ken Fareed at 6,200. The value is coming from the Jazz side of things. 7,200 for Derek Favors is super appealing against this Denver front court, as is 73 for Rudy Gobert. Both of those guys should be able to top 30 points, even come into the range of 35 points pretty comfortably, and I think they're both in line for good nights And I really love Rod Hood here at 5,900. He's a 30 average across his last three. He's playing with a renewed sense of vigor and confidence. Love what he's been able to do. And Gordie Haywood's at 8,300. The salary is the thing that scares me off, but this matchup is brilliant from him. He dropped over 50 in the last one. He's a 36.5 average across his last five. I'm more hesitant with him than I am with Hood, Favors, and Gobert, but he's not a bad option, especially in a tournament where he can go big and put up 50 or so. And Hal Neto, that's enough Hal Neto talk. The Sacramento Kings and the Chicago Bulls, a couple of injuries for the Kings. Boogie Cousins, obviously, with his ankle, he missed the last game. Ben McLemore missed the last game with a wrist problem, and Rajon Rondo is dealing with turf toe. So if Rondo misses, Darren Collison is the guy that we want, clearly. 4,500 for Collison, it's going to be a massive bargain if Rondo's out. Watch this space. If Rondo's in at 8,500, it still feels a bit expensive, but the matchup is really nice. I'd probably steer clear of a guy with turf toe, though, just because we don't know if it's going to flare up, if it's going to limit him, any of that sort of stuff. Etuan Moore at 3,600. He's been playing big minutes as a starting small forward. He's not doing much with him, but I'd be okay throwing him in there in a tournament and hoping it works out. And same goes with Bob Portis. He's at minimum salary. The production from him has been disappointing, but he can go big, and this matchup is absolutely beautiful for opposition big men. Taj Gibson at 5,300, fine with using him as well. He's been easily smashing value over his last five games. And I think that, you know, in this sort of matchup, we're primed for a 5-6x sort of performance from Taj. If Boogie is out, Willie Cauley-Stein at 4,300, probably more of a tournament play, but this is a great spot against the Bulls. So I'm not too hesitant about using him in cash. And Costa Kufos would be the other guy. He put up 22 in the last game with Cousins out. He's at 3,600, so that means that he has to be considered definitely to be used in both formats. Boogie Cousins at 11,100. If he happens to play and everything is fine, it doesn't get much better than this as a matchup going up against the Bulls. Cousins is someone, it's expensive, but you definitely have to consider him if he is right to go. I like Jim Butler here. He's less than 9,000, 8,800. He's averaging over 40 in the last three. The Kings haven't got anyone to really shut him down. He looks like he's going to be a pretty good option here. Pau Gasol, similar. Who's going to stop him? He's at 8,700. You feel like you're almost going to get 40 points from him most nights. Love the matchup. And on the Kings side of things, Rudy Gay, 8,000. If there's no Boogie at 8,000, he is a great option. He's averaging 40 points across the last five. If Gay plays, it probably means I want to steer clear if Cousins plays, I want to steer clear of Gay at 8,000. But if he doesn't, 8,000 feels like a bargain. He put up 55 in the last game. If McLemore is out, Marco Bellinelli dropped over 30 in the game with McLemore missing. He's at 3,800, so almost min salary. A really positive matchup for Marco Bellinelli as well. So he is a name to consider if we have no Ben McLemore. The last game of the night is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 11. The total is 207. Nick Pekovic, Kevin Martin, Kevin Garnett are all questionable at the moment. I would say they most likely all get reduced down to doubtful, except Martin, who was almost ready to play in this game. Now, they have a bit of an impact on other guys like Gorgui Dieng and Zach LaVine in particular, but Dieng at 5,500, I'm still running. Even if Pekovic and Garnett both play, I think that Dieng still has to be used at 5,500. Definitely in play. Andrew Wiggins at 6,300. Massive game against the Lakers. Still not trusting of him, though. Zach LaVine at 47. If Kevin Martin plays, no thanks. In fact, not a great spot for him in this one. Negative matchup against the Clippers defense. I think we'll leave him alone. 8,600 for Karl Anthony Towns. Didn't get up to that against the weakened Lakers front court. Against DeAndre Jordan, it's a tougher ask. I know how good he's been. It just feels a little bit high. It feels too high. Rick Rubio, 6,700. Not against Chris Paul, but Chris Paul against Rick Rubio, I like it. 9,700 for Paul. And if you don't want to spend up for Russ Westbrook, I think that Chris Paul feels like 45 points is definitely within reach for him, you know, relatively comfortably, so he can be used. 5,000 for JJ Redick. He dropped 29 in the last game, which was impressive. His form hadn't been great up till then, so he remains probably just a tournament guy to have a look at for me. DeAndre Jordan, 8,200, putting up big numbers lately. I think that he can be used, and you can have a bit of confidence with using him. He's 400 less than Karl Anthony Towns. This is the odd thing about DeAndre Jordan. Okay, he's 400 less, but he's in the last five games, DeAndre Jordan's highest score is 56, and Towns' is 47. I'd rather use Jordan, to be honest, than Towns at the moment. Just it feels a little bit more consistent, and that extra $400 does make a difference. And I reckon you'd have way less people using Jordan than they would using Towns, and that can be key in a tournament. $4,500 for Jamal Crawford. He's been playing well lately. Okay with using him in both sort of formats. Probably leaning more towards tournaments, though. Not much else that really is all that interesting in this game. Let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, Isaiah Cannon, $3,700. Georgie Hill, $59. And Russ Westbrook, $10,900. Shooting guards, Dion Waiters, $41. Rod Hood, $59. And Jim Butler at $8,800. Small forwards, Kent Bazemore, $49, Bob Carver at $51, and LeBron James, $10,200. Power forwards, Tristan Thompson, $48, Miles Turner, $55, and Paulie Millsap at $8,000. While the centers are Jordy Hill at $4,700, Gorgie Jeng at $5,500, and Andre Drummond at $8,700. We are done here, guys. Don't forget, follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Basketball Monster is Basque Monster. You also can follow me on Instagram at redrock_bball, and Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball, where each day we're going to have a contest on Instagram, a contest on Facebook. Make sure you are joining in there. I don't know which player it's going to be yet for both of them, but I will put it up. Plenty of time for the games to start. Jump over to Facebook and to Instagram. Like the pages, follow the pages, and give your guess in the daily contests on those sites. Remember, we should be announcing the top that the 500th iTunes review jersey winner tomorrow, if you guys send in a lot of reviews. Well, actually, not that much, because I said we're really close to 500, and I reckon we should get it in the next 12 hours. So looking forward to announcing that, hopefully, on tomorrow's show. Don't forget, basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com, and SeatGeek. You can support the podcast by going to SeatGeek, signing up, and using that promo code REDROCK. Even if you don't buy a ticket, you really do support the podcast and help out a lot in that way. We are done for today's show, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.